Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour, Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, now is out the 12th Hour, in the Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is May 7, 2014, or it is as if 9, 2018, we will start our first service today with a song entitled, Ask Not to Be Stewed. Ask not to be excused, this earnest work to do, stand ready to be you, where he may station you. His invitation time to thee has often given, accept and thou shalt find his sweet work for heaven. Come, oh come, just not to be excused. Come, oh come, stand ready to be healed. Just not to be excused, the answer may be given. Thou hast my love of you, thy heart excused from heaven. Just not to be excused, the Master calls today. Too long hast thou refused, now hasten to obey. The harvest fields are white, the laborers are few. If this be thy delight, the Master's work to do. Come, oh come, ask not to be excused. Come, oh come, stand ready to be healed. Ask not to be excused, this answer may be given. Thou hast my love of you, thy heart is seized from heaven. Ask not to be excused, there's danger in delay. That wondrous love of you forever turns away. A mercy gently pleads and points the way to heaven. For Yahshua intercedes, oh come and be forgiven. Come, oh come, ask not to be excused. Come, oh come, stand ready to be healed. Ask not to be excused, this answer may be given. Thou hast my love of you, thou art excused from heaven. Studying typology, we're going to continue on. This is part three. We're in 11 symbolic code number five. We're going to do a little review of what we read in our last study. We're on page 11. First consideration is given unto Elijah, whose great burden was to cast out idolatry and to set up the true worship among the Elohim people of the Israel for 3 years and 6 months, or 1260 days, or 42 months. There was no rain, James 5:17, Luke 4:25. And during this time he hid from the face of Ahab. At the end of that period, the great showdown on the Mount Carmel took place, in which every one of the prophets of Baal were destroyed. And when all the people saw it, they fell on their faces, and they said, "The Yahweh, He is the Yahweh. The Yahweh, He is the Yahweh." 1 Kings 18:39. Now, according to this, Ezekiel 9 will have to take place in the Adventist Church to eliminate all of the ministers, the false prophets of Baal today, to coincide with the antitype of Elijah slaying 850 of the false prophets on Mount Carmel that day. Okay, now we'll continue on. Next we shall consider Yahshua's ministry. His forerunner was John the Baptist, and both Yahshua and John preached that the kingdom of the Elohim was at hand. Yahshua's ministry unto the time of his crucifixion covered 3 years and 6 months, or 1260 days, or 42 months. Then he was crucified, resurrected, and ascended into heaven. As a result of his ministry, there were 120 first fruits, Acts 1:15, and afterwards a multitude of such as should be saved, Acts 2:41, 46, and 47. Finally, we shall consider Revelation 11, showing how the types meet antitype in this prophecy. In the fulfillment of the testimony of the minister, page 475, 476, and Malachi 4:5, the latter day Elijah came to Elohim's people with the same burden and work that the first Elijah came to do, cast down false worship and set up true worship among Yahweh's people. His message was basically and mainly the same as John the Baptist: repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. So, the question has been asked in the Davidian world, and it's been answered by saying that P.T. Holler proved that he is antitypical John the Elijah. And Roland Johnson has quoted that and printed that. But the truth of the matter is that there can only be one antitypical Elijah, and when his time comes, he will appear. And it's always with the message of repent, the kingdom of Yahweh is at hand. Well, that was the first word that I give to Verlis when I gave him that message from heaven, July the 14th, 2002. I said, repent. First thing out of my mouth. The kingdom of Yahweh is at hand. In other words, I said, repent and restore the daily. Set the sanctuary back up and put it back into operation. Okay. In the 1950 General Conference Special, page 34-36, we are plainly told that the Elijah's message came in the publications of the Shepherd Rod. Moreover, since the promised Elijah is to be the last prophet to the church today, and since he has come and gone, we can know that we are now in the 42 months, the 1260 days of the Revelation 11, when the two witnesses are to prophesy. Now, this is Florence Harlow talking in 1956. That's republished in this article for V.T. Harlow, and she's saying now he's dead and gone, and he was the Elijah John, and blah, blah, blah. And so now she's saying that we're in this 42 months. Well, we know by now that that's not true, or wasn't true. And so, where are we at today? Let us go on. Just as Yahshua preached the same message, John the Baptist preached, that is, repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand, so the message now to be preached during this 42-month period is the same as the last message before it, that is, true worship, and the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Indeed, during the 3.5 years of Yahshua's ministry, he commissioned his disciples thus, and as you go preach, saying, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. But when they persecute you in this city, flee ye into another. For verily I say unto you, you shall not have gone over the cities of Israel till the Son of Man be come. Matthew 10:7 and verse 23. Yahshua himself said these words, even though he was already there with the disciples, the same commission is ours during this 3.5 years that the two witnesses are prophesying in the sackcloth just before the Yahshua suddenly comes to his temple to purify the sons of Levi, Malachi 3:1. Now, we just had a divine revelation here, folks. Let's look at what I just read again. It says, now, Yahshua himself said these words, even though he was already there with the disciples, the same commission is ours during this 3.5 years that the two witnesses are prophesying in sackcloth just before the Yahshua suddenly comes to his temple to purify the sons of Levi. Now, he suddenly came to his temple at the Passover of 2002, fulfilling this prophecy of Malachi 3:1. I've done this study before and haven't seen this just in this light. But I know the solemn assembly 1999, when the voice spoke to Verlis, said, sanctify the congregation. I've said this many times before, but I don't want to belabor the point, but the main point to be understood here now is that he suddenly came to his temple at the Passover 2002. Now, from 1999, you'd have two and a half years up to 2002. Okay, we're going to have to back up to 1998 when, at the atonement, when Brother Johnson was told to sanctify the congregation, get the sins blotted out. That day, that he had some resistance there on that day and some rebellion, and he did not deal with it. But that was the beginning of a 3.5 year period for Gilead Center, because at the Passover of 2002, I said before, it was at the Solemn Assembly of 1999, that they started this 3.5 years. Well, to the Passover of 2003 ended the 3.5 year period from that solemn assembly in 1999. And that was when we were permanently separated forever from Gilead Center. It was at the Passover 2003, not 2002. Okay. So now, Yahshua suddenly came to his temple. But he came at the Passover of 2002. That was when he started separation at Gilead Center. And Zechariah 3 says that there was a whole year allotted for that separation to take place and to be permanent. And that was of Zechariah 3 talks about he cleansed that land in one day. A day for a year. And so he started cleaning that land at the Passover of 2002. And that's when Yahshua suddenly came to his temple. And that was when the two witnesses witnessed for 3.5 years from 1998 at the atonement to the Passover of 2002. That was when these two witnesses of Revelation 11 witnessed. Okay. Moreover, just as the Elijah, John the Baptist, and Yahshua in the types were sent to Israel, so antiquated Elijah and the two witnesses ministered directly in behalf of the lost sheep of the house of Israel in Laodicea at Kermit, Texas, 2002. And during the time the two witnesses prophesy, there is no more latter rain, no new messy. Okay. No new movement. Well, who brought the latter rain? Antitypically, Elijah David. And when they didn't accept the latter rain, Brother Johnson was the one that was the responsible for accepting it. On July the 14th, 2002, when he rejected that message from heaven, then he rejected the latter rain at the same time. So Elijah David is the one that brought the latter rain. And what was the latter rain? What was the latter rain to do for? It was to restore the sanctuary and to purify the sons of Levi and put the sanctuary that had fallen down, the tabernacle of David, and to raise it up and to start the judgment of the living. Okay. So it says no new movement, just as there was no rain for 3.5 years in the days of Elijah. So it says in Sister White is saying, or Vital saying, and during the time of the two witnesses, prophecy, there is no more latter rain, no new message, no new movement. Okay, well, Elijah David just closed out the seventh movement with Gilead Center with his message of the latter rain in 2002. And so now he took a whole year to open up, and for the eighth movement, to get to take effect. And that eighth movement began end of 2002, in the year of 2002. And there was no rain for 3.5 years in the days of Elijah. Well, actually, no rain for 3.5 years started in 1998. Okay. When Rhodes Johnson failed to purify the congregation in 1998, and their two witnesses went to prophesying. There were dead bodies laying in the street, which is the Old and New Testament. Prophecies that were to unfold during this time are found there in the prophecies of the Bible. The two witnesses has them. Okay. Just as Yahshua was crucified, so the two witnesses will be killed. Well, we know that the message was of Yahshua was crucified in 2002. So we know that he was crucified antitypically in the message. That was when the two witnesses were crucified right along with him. And as Yahshua was resurrected, so the two witnesses will be raised. Moreover, as Yahshua ascended into the heaven, so also the two witnesses will be exalted unto heaven. For the same power that raised Yahshua from the dead will raise his church and glorify it with him. Above all principalities, above all powers, above every name that is named, not only in this world, but also in the world to come. Isaiah 7:87. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with Yahweh, and the Word was Yahweh, and the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. And we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of the grace and truth. John 1:1-14. For the prophecy of Revelation 11 shows that Yahshua in our day, in the form of his truth, his word, is to be crucified afresh at the hands of his professed people at Gilead Center 2002, and that the truth will be raised in the glorious exaltation and victory and unto the shame of its enemies. Who became the enemies? The house of Esau that is in charge of the covenant that Yahweh made with Isaac, not Esau. But Esau had the first privilege, though, to see if he could make good on that covenant that was only loaned to him by privilege in 1970. And so let's continue on reading now. These are the facts, as certain of any other prophecies. And no one can successfully deny them or attempt to ignore them, but all would do well to profit by this knowledge and be a true disciple of Yahshua. For the saints that were raised with Yahshua at his resurrection typify those who shall rise in the resurrection of Daniel 12:2. For we are told, if the Moses represents the general resurrection, who then would represent the mixed or special resurrection of the Daniel 12:2? We have the one of Matthew 27:52-53, and the graves were open, and many bodies of the saints which slept arose and came out of the graves after his resurrection and went into the holy city and appeared in the many. For the saints who had part in this resurrection were gathered from all ages. Some who perhaps had lived at the very time Yahshua was preaching and were acquainted with him and his work were witnesses unto his resurrection. Read early writings, page 184, Desire of Ages, page 786. There is still another reason why Matthew 27:52 is a type of this missed resurrection. Those who were resurrected with Yahshua are witnesses of the deity of the Yahshua unto the very ones who crucified him. Speaking of this mixed resurrection, Daniel says, and many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life and some to shame and everlasting contempt. Then there will be some righteous included who lived and witnessed the crucifixion, also those who crucified him and pierced him. For Revelation 1:7, behold, he cometh with the clouds, and every eye shall see him, and they also which pierced him. Therefore the resurrection which witnessed of the power of the Elohim unto these murderers of his son, typified the just who were raised in the mixed special resurrection. Shepherd Rod, Volume 1, page 4748. Still further, regarding the resurrection of Daniel 12, Daniel himself recorded this information when he had completed writing the great prophecies of the book of the Daniel. And I, Daniel, looked, and behold, there stood other two, the one on this side of the bank of the river, and the other on that side of the bank of the river. And one said unto the man clothed in linen, which was upon the waters of the river, how long shall it be to the end of these wonders? And I heard the man clothed in linen, which was upon the waters of the river, when he held up his right hand and his left hand unto heaven, and swear by him that liveth forever, that it shall be for a time, times and a half. And when he shall have accomplished to scatter the power of the holy people, all these things shall be finished. Daniel 12, 5 to 7. Daniel here is told that all the things he had written in the book of the Daniel were to be finished at the end of the time, times and a half. Now when that time, time and a half end? 2002. Starting at the Passover. And when he shall have accomplished to scatter the power of the holy people. Okay. So now, who is this that accomplished to scatter the power of the holy people? The man of sin. The one that fell away. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 3. Okay. Had the first fall away, had become the first fall away, a man of sin to be revealed. Okay. And since not all the wonders of the book of Daniel have been finished, instances being the fall of the king of the north, the deliverance by Michael, the special resurrection, it clearly indicates that the time has not yet passed, for the power of the holy people is the same as the power that is possessed by the two witnesses of the Revelation 11. For the power of the Elohim people is in the truth in the word. So, it took quite a power to bring a prophetic movement to an end like we did at Kermit, Texas. So the power had to be within the mouth of the true witness, and it was those two witnesses. The Old and New Testament, and I was executing the words of the Old and New Testament upon the prophet there in Israel. Okay, coming back to the typology for the Revelation 11, just as there was a numbered group of constituting the first fruits of the Yahshua's labor, 120 of Acts 1:15. So the first fruits this time, number 144,000, Revelation 14:1. For the Pentecost of that time, and recorded in Acts 2:1-7, is a type of the Pentecost recorded in Joel 2:28-29, which we look forward to in the commencement of the loud crowd, Revelation 18. And the multitude of such as should be saved that were brought in after the first Pentecost. Acts 2:41, 46, 47 typify the great multitude that shall be saved after the antitypical Pentecost, Revelation 7:9 and Isaiah 66:19-20. How perfect is the work of the Elohim? How great is his love unto mankind? How solemn the times in which we live? Revelation 11 is indeed a solemn yet encouraging prophecy. We dare not treat it lightly or ignore it, for it is a part of the more sure word of the prophecy. It was given for the enlightenment and guidance of the Elohim's people, not to fill space in the Bible. With this knowledge, what manner of men ought we to be? Just as there was a showdown in the time of both the types, Elijah's, and Yahshua's ministries, Revelation 11, indicates that there will certainly be a showdown today at the end of the 3.5 years allotted for the two witnesses to prophesy, and that certainly took place at Kermit. We had such a showdown that it brought the whole Adventist movement to a close, and closed out the judgment of the dead and started the judgment of the living. Closed out the seventh movement, opened up the eighth movement with a new prophet, with a new message. Okay, let's continue. Furthermore, it appeared unto Elijah at the time of the showdown on the ancient Mount Carmel that there was no true worshippers of Elohim, although in reality there were 7,000 who had not bowed the knee unto Baal. And as Ezekiel Hollis has pointed out, the 7 is a complete number, is a type of the 144,000. So when that showdown showdown at Kermit, Texas took place, I made the comment time and again, it looked like there is no true worshipers left in Israel. We were down to 4 families at Kermit, Texas, when we came to our end. 4 families represented, no, 5 families represented there. 5 families. 3 families of the Johnsons, and 1 family of the Brunkins, and 1 family of the Allen DeLong. Likewise, at the time of Yahshua's great trial, it outwardly appeared that his work had brought forth no result. Yet, a great harvest of the souls, such as should be saved, were afterward disclosed to view. Therefore, let us now store up courage from these types and examples, and the prophecy of the hour of the church's great trial just ahead, as well as the prophecies of the great harvest of the souls to come in after, so that we may then with courage look with the prophetic eye into the future as portrayed by the more sure word of the prophecy, and know that the Elohim's word will not return unto him void, and that we may rest in the confident assurance that the knowledge of the truth shall verily cover the earth as the waters cover the sea. Hebrews 2:14. Yes, vast multitudes will surely be made to know of the saving truth as the earth becomes lightened with its glory in the trying but wondrously triumphant experience of the two witnesses. But of the times and the seasons, brethren, you have no need that I write unto you. For yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Yahshua so cometh as a thief in the night. For when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction cometh upon them, as travail upon a woman with a child, and they shall not escape. But ye, brethren, are not in darkness, that that day should overtake you as a thief. Ye are the children of the light, and the children of the day. We are not of the night, nor of the darkness. Therefore let us not sleep, as do others, but let us watch and be sober. 1 Thessalonians 5:1-6. Who then is a faithful and wise servant, whom his master has made ruler over his household to give them meat in due season? Blessed is that servant when his master, when he cometh, shall find so doing. Verily I say unto you, that he shall make him ruler over all his goods. But all this took place 2002, starting the 8th movement with the house of David and the judgment of the living time. But, and if that evil servant shall say in his heart, my master delayeth his coming, and shall begin to smite his fellow servants and to eat and drink with the drunken, the master of that servant shall come in a day when he looketh not for him, and in an hour that he is not aware of, and shall cut him asunder and appoint him his portion with the hypocrite. There shall be weeping and gnashing of the teeth. Matthew 24:45-51. We are at a time of the decision. Let each of us choose to be a faithful, wise, and awake servant, that we may be prepared for the day of our visitation. Now, for the further study of the Revelation 11, the following text material is recommended. The Symbolic Code, Volume 11, Number 1, November 1955, and also 2 Timely Greetings, Number 15, and track number 5, The Final Warning. Okay, 11 Symbolic Code, number 1. We're going to go into the time of the modern Israel deliverance. It says, inquiries have come unto Mount Carmel headquarters in the recent months asking what was the last light that Brother Hollis received before his passing. Sister Hollis brings this light to our attention at this time because of the lateness of the hour, for the vital current importance of the prophecy involved, and over and above all, because it has now become the divinely appointed time to make this heart-stirring revelation known unto all Davidians. During the last months of his life, Brother Holliff was engaged in the studying of the Talmudic reading, Volume 2, Number 15, preparatory for the enlarging upon the subject matter therein for its reprint. At this time, he expressed a definite conviction that the time prophecy of Revelation 11, 2-12, and Daniel 12, 6 and 7 could have met their fulfillment only in the type from 538 to 1798 AD. And as they have a latter day fulfillment, the basis for this conclusion now follows. And one said unto the man clothed in the linen, which was upon the waters of the river, how long shall it be unto the end of these wonders? And I heard the man clothed in the linen, which was upon the waters of the river, when he held up his right hand and his left hand unto heaven, and sware by him that liveth forever, that it shall be for a time, times and a half, and when he shall have accomplished to scatter the power of the holy people, all these things shall be finished. Daniel 12, 6 and 7. For the phrase, and swear by him that liveth forever, that it shall be for a time, times and a half, and when he shall have accomplished to scatter the power of the holy people, all these things shall be finished, indicate that at the end of the time, when the power of the holy people shall have been scattered, all these things, the things contained in the book of the Daniel, shall be finished. But since not all the wonders of the book of the Daniel have been finished, instances being the fall of the king of the north, the deliverance by the Michael, and the special resurrection, it clearly indicates that the time has not yet passed. Moreover, since the Revelation 11, 13 transpires the same hour as the events in the verses preceding it, and since verse 13 applies unto the start of Ezekiel 9, Tiny Greetings, volume number 15, page 12, then the preceding verses must also take place about that time. With these thoughts in mind, we shall now review Tiny Greetings, volume 2, number 15. Revelation 10:1, and I saw another mighty angel come down from heaven, clothed with a cloud, and a rainbow was upon his head, and his face is as it were the sun, and his feet as the pillars of fire. Now, this angel has all the characteristics of a power that sends down the latter rain, and it causes the spiritual grain fully to develop, for that is what cloud, sunshine, and rainbow indicate. As a rainbow never appears without the rain, the angel is therefore the angel that brings the rain and the sunshine for the development of the final harvest. Revelation 10:2, and he had in his hand a little book open, and he set his right foot upon the sea and his left foot on the earth. There is but one book in the Bible that has had to be opened, and that is the book of the Daniel 12:4. And since the book, since the first thing which the angel did was to open the book, the analysis proves that he actually appears on the scene at the commencement of the time of the end, the time that the book was to be opened, Revelation 10:2. You know that man naturally starts out with his right foot. Now, since the angel's right foot was upon the sea and his left foot upon the land, the symbolism shows that he starts out on the sea, the province of the Daniel's beast, Daniel 7, then on the earth, the province of the two-horned beast, Revelation 13, 10-18. His work, therefore, starts in the old country and should include the very first truth that was disclosed from the book of the Daniel. All in all, his message and power proved to be worldwide, land and sea, Time to Greetings, volume 2, number 15, page 3 and 4. For the sake of the brevity, we shall omit the next few paragraphs describing the Millerite movement and its disappointment. and a subsequent commission to the Seventh-day Adventist movement. Let the reader review it in his personal study. Revelation 11:1. And there was given me a reed like unto a rod, and the angel stood, saying, Rise and measure the temple of Elohim, and the altar, and them that worship therein. For the measuring of the worshippers is in the reality, the numbering of them. And so you see that following the Seventh-day Adventist movement, there is to be a numbering of his people. And as there is but one numbered company, 144,000, Revelation 7:3, the first fruits, Revelation 14:4, the servants of Elohim, Revelation 7:3, it follows that they are the ones who are numbered, who escape, and also who are sent to the nation. Yes, they are the ones who finish the mystery of the Elohim as they bring all their brethren out of all nations, Revelation 7:9, the second fruits. Verse 2, But the court which is without the temple leave out and measure it not, for it is given unto the Gentile, and the holy city shall they tread underfoot 42 months. For the worshippers, the members of the church, the tribes of Israel, are to be numbered, but those who are to fill up the court, those of the Gentiles, are unnumbered. At this I beheld, and lo, a great multitude which no man should number, of all nations and kindreds and people and tongues, stood before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed with white robes and palms in their hands, Revelation 7:9. 7 times 7, 49, determined the year of Jubilee, the liberation of the people and of the land. The type of the kingdom complete, besides any other significance, the 42 months being only 6 sevens, it signifies that the holy city of Jerusalem will not be trodden down all the way up to the time of the antiphonal Jubilee. For the Gentiles are to be driven out of it before the mystery of the Elohim is finished, before the seventh angel begins to sound. Verse 3 and 4, And I will give power unto my two witnesses, and they shall prophesy 1,260 days, clothed in sackcloth. These are the two olive trees and the two candlesticks standing before the Elohim of the earth. When the prophet Zechariah asked what the olive trees of his vision symbolized, the angel answered, The worthy of it, Zechariah 4:6. For the two olive trees then are figurative of the Old and New Testament, the Bible, the Great Controversy, page 267. As to the symbolization of the candlesticks, the Yahweh himself points out that they are figurative of the churches, Revelation 1:20. The two candlesticks in the condition of the olive trees are therefore figurative of the Old and New Testament churches, the churches which gave us the Bible. Verse 5, And if any man will hurt them, a fire proceedeth out of their mouth and devoureth their enemies, and if any man will hurt them, he must in this like manner be killed. From this we see that though the Bible is the best friend to his friend, it is a terrible enemy to his enemies. When the truth cannot save, it kills. Verse 8 to 10. Okay, besides possessing the power just described during the days of the prophecy of the two witnesses, the following verse continues to describe their power. Verse 6. These have power to shut heaven, that it rain not in the days of their prophecy, have power over waters to turn them to blood, and to smite the earth with all plagues as often as they will. Though the two witnesses have power for 260 days to shut up heaven, that it rain not, cause to cease the falling of the latter rain, yet they have power over waters to turn them to blood, they give mortal life, and to smite the earth with all plagues as often as they will. Verse 7 to 13. And when they shall have finished their testimony, the beast that ascendeth out of the bottomless pit shall make war against them, and shall overcome them and kill them, and their dead bodies shall lie in the street of the great city, which spiritually is called Sodom and Egypt, where also our Yahshua was crucified. And they of the people and kindreds and tongues and nations shall see their dead bodies 3 days and a half, and shall not suffer their dead bodies to be put in graves, And they that dwell upon the earth shall rejoice over them and make merry, and shall send gifts one to another, because these two prophets tormented them that dwelt on the earth. And after 3 days and a half, the spirit of life from the Elohim entered into them, and they stood upon their feet, and great fear fell upon them which saw them. And they heard a great voice from heaven saying unto them, Come up hither. And they ascended up into heaven in the cloud, and their enemies beheld them. And the same hour was there a great earthquake, and a tenth part of the city fell, and the earthquake was slain, and in the earthquake were slain of men 7,000, and the remnant were affrighted, and gave glory unto the Elohim of heaven. For the Bible points out that one bottomless pit was opened, the pit out of which the locusts came, Revelation 9:2, and it was the heavenly star that opened the pit to let out its captives, the locusts who were to hurt only those men who have not the seal of Elohim in their forehead. Since the locusts were capable of knowing who had and also who had not the seal of Elohim in their forehead, and since they were friends to the Elohim sealed people, the truth is obvious. For the star that liberated them from the pit is the Yahshua, and the locusts are the Christians, the people that were rescued from the apostate Judaism. Now the 144,000, they were rescued from the apostate Judaism at Kermit, Texas, 2002. That's when the rescue began, when Gilead's sentence came to its end, closed out the judgment of the dead, the seventh movement, and opened up the eighth movement with the house of David, judgment of the living, in the 12th parabolic hour, closing out the 11th parabolic hour with Gilead's sentence. Moreover, the fact that the angel of Revelation 20, verse 1, Satan's great army, is the one who has the key of the bottomless pit, it follows that the angel of Revelation 20, verse 1, and the star of Revelation 9, 1 are the same. For the one unto whom the key was given is the only one that can have it. Now we may ask, who is the beast of the bottomless pit? If the star that came from heaven and opened the pit is Yahshua, and if the locusts that came out of the pit are the Christians, then there is no way of escaping the conclusion that the beast which came out of the bottomless pit is symbolical of the Christendom. Thus it is that the Yahshua was crucified there. Now, Yahshua was antipathy crucified at the Passover 2002 at Gilead Center. And so, who was in that bottomless pit? A beast. The beast. Okay. Now that the city is spiritually called Egypt, it denotes that it is holding Elohim's people into slavery. The name Sodom denotes that Elohim's true people will have to be rescued from it, as was Lot. A tenth part of the city must represent the Yahshua's part, the tithe, so to speak. The earthquake, therefore, represents a shaking in the church of the Elohim. The remnant who give glory unto Elohim can only be the faithful who survive the shaking. Thus is the church purified. This earthquake, then, is symbolical of the slaughter of Ezekiel 9 and coincides with Isaiah 66:16. More, the fact that the mystery of the Elohim is finished when the seventh angel begins to sound, and also the fact that the shaking is here shown to take place during the sounding of the sixth angel, the truth stands out that the shaking takes place before the gospel work is finished. Through the prophecy in our day also foresaw the shaking. Then I asked the meaning of the shaking I had seen, and was shown that it would be caused by the straight testimony called forth by the counsel of the true witness unto the latest end. This will have its effect upon the heart and the receiver, and will lead him to exalt the standard and pour forth the straight truth. Some will not bear the straight testimony. They will rise up against it, and this is what will cause a shaking among Elohim's people. Early Writings, page 270. Volume 2, page 15, number 15, and page 11 to 13. Okay, it says, from this study we can clearly see the following fact. Number one, that fulfillment of the slaughter of Ezekiel 9 is immediately preceded by the 42 months. Okay, so I told you the 42 months, I actually believe it started in this case at the Psalm of 1999, and we went to the Passover 2003 when we separated permanently from Gilead Center in 2003 at the Passover, and Wallace Johnson was invited to come and break over and to bring his congregation and to join us for the Passover 2003, and he made the decision not to. That, as far as I'm concerned, is the 42 months that precede Ezekiel 9 going into effect. Revelation 11:2, or 1260 days. Revelation 11:3, or time times and a half, Daniel 12:7. Number two, that during the days of this prophecy, the Gentiles are treading the holy city of Jerusalem, at the end of which they are to be driven out. That during this time prophecy, there is a cessation of the latter rain. Number four, that great power is exercised by the two witnesses, the two olive trees, and the two candlesticks, so that they are able to give mortal life to one class and to destroy any who would hurt them, and to smite the earth with all plagues as often as they will. Number five, that this period terminates with the slaughter of Ezekiel 9 and the act of the Elohim. War brought by the Christendom against the two witnesses, an act of men. So the Christendom that was found in the bottomless pit was that beast that was the enemies to the saints that were delivered out of that bottomless pit by the man, by the angel that had the key to come down and had the key to unlock it. And a 3.5 day period when the two witnesses are dead, after which they rise in great exaltation by the divine interposition. For further study concerning the sequence of the events around the fulfillment of Ezekiel 9, please read the Fundamental Beliefs, Timely Greetings, Volume 2, Number 10, page 29 and 30, Tract 5, Final Warning, especially the first paragraph on page 114. For the correlative reading, your attention is called until the time of reading, Volume 2, Number 7, page 9 to 11, and Volume 2, Number 42, and page 29. As we approach the time of these events, more can be said about them. But for now, the important point to be emphasized is that it is clear that we have already entered the period of the 42 months, and that we have no time to lose in making every preparation for the day of our visitation. Let us work and pray that we make our calling and election sure. Let us enlist ourselves wholeheartedly on the Elohim side before it is forever too late, and we be left in the company of those who shall weep and gnash their teeth. Since we now know through the prophecy that the latter rain has temporarily stopped, let us not waste our time with the strange voices and winds of doctrine, but rather let us make available to others the very present truth which now has mighty power to give life or death. Let us engage ourselves in the following, or in the getting for Yahshua, and not scattering with the Satan. Let us study that we may be well fortified of the truth, that we may be accounted faithful stewards, and be progressing toward the Christian maturity for the getting harvest, and also that we may see eye to eye, all speaking the same thing. Let us speak only the truth to our neighbor, and strengthen the feeble knees. Let us be strong in the Yahweh and witness fearlessly in defense of the truth and righteousness, though the majority forsake and champions be few, realizing that the battle is Yahweh's. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Ephesians 6:12. Let us make the Yahweh our only fear, our only dread. And all the people answered with the one voice and said, all the words which the Yahweh has said we will do. all that the Yahweh has said we will do and be obedient. Exodus 24:3-7. Okay, that's the end of that code number 5. All right, now we're going to go to 12 symbolic code number 4. We're going to finish the study up with what brings success. Sermon of Vitti House 1944. James 4:2-3. You lust and you have not. You kill and desire to have and cannot obtain. You fight in war, yet you have not because you ask not. You ask and receive not because you ask amiss, that you may consume it upon your lust. There is a class of people who do everything they can in order to enrich themselves in the material wealth, perhaps even for a good cause. Yet they are poor because they attempt to acquire it in their own wisdom and strength, and do not ask Elohim either for the riches or his help to obtain them. Because this class did not ask, they received not. There is also another class who asked, but they asked amiss, wanting only to consume it upon themselves, and therefore they too receive nothing. These are but two reasons why even some of Elohim's own people are poor. James here deals only with these two reasons. But other Bible writers give additional specific reasons, such as poor management, indolence, providential reverses, and so on. By the inspired testimony, we have learned that Abraham and Lot both became so rich that they had to dissolve partnership and occupy separate portions of the land. Abraham suggested that Lot should choose first the land he wanted, and Abraham would take what was left. Lot chose all the plains and left the hills for Abraham. Perhaps from a business standpoint, Lot's choice was good, but from the Elohim's viewpoint, it was poor. In making his selection, Lot failed to see or take into account the fact that he had been greatly blessed by his having been in a partnership with his uncle Abraham. He thought only of his personal or selfish future security. Abraham nevertheless raised no objection to Lot's choice. He gladly took the hills. In the process of the time, Lot moved into the city, where he became poorer and poorer. At last, the angel of Yahweh had to rescue him, and he came out with nothing. In the striking contrast under Lot's devastating experience, Abraham steadily became richer and richer, and Elohim finally gave him all the land. What was the secret of Abraham's success? Elohim himself made Abraham prosperous when he saw Abraham's faithful in everything. When we are faithful in everything, he will more abundantly bless us also. When Joseph started out, he too was very poor. He was sold by his own brothers and later sold again as a slave. All he possessed at that time were his soul and the clothes on his body. But eventually he became the world's richest man. He held the key to all the riches in Egypt, because whatever he did, he put real religion into it. Even Pharaoh recognized his outstanding worth and availed himself of it by appointing Joseph to run his government. Well, this is what he's done with us. He's appointed us to run his government, the house of David, today. For the troubles which came unto Joseph in his life were actually for his good and prepared him to become an interpreter of the dream, a king of the doubtless, the greatest economist that the world has ever seen. For the Elohim had observed that Joseph did everything as if it were his very own, and moreover, he was constantly sensible unto the fact that Elohim was his master and that nothing could be hidden from him. It was this conviction that caused Joseph to understand that regardless what men did to him or said about him, Elohim alone had charge of his life. Therefore, in the prosperity and fame, Joseph maintained his loyalty and integrity, and in the adversity, Joseph did not waste his time ascribing to others the cause of his trouble. Instead, he set about to behave in a way that would commend himself even unto the royalty, for it is not likely that the Ishmaelites would have been able to sell him unto Potiphar had he not been a superior person. And the Yahweh was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master the Egyptian, and his master saw that that Yahweh was with him, and that the Yahweh made all that he had to prosper in his hand, and Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him, and he made him overseer over his house, and all that he had he put into his hand, and Joseph was a goodly person and well favored. Genesis 39:2-4. But again, it was not was his lot to suffer reverses over which he had no control. And he landed in prison, where his excellent personality and faithfulness once again won him his freedom, and moreover he was promoted to the highest position of the land. In the meantime, Joseph's brothers kept coming down until finally they were reduced to such poverty that they had to leave their country and come to Joseph for their food and living. We should be able to see in this that although Elohim's people may be disgracefully dealt with by the jealous associates, still they will not suffer the wrong forever if Elohim is with them. For the Joseph followed righteousness, and no man could prevent Elohim from blessing him with the riches and honor. It matters not what men may say or do against you that puts you down. If you have Elohim with you, you will in the end be on top and they at the bottom. Jealousy may be as cruel as a grave, but sooner or later righteousness is to be rewarded. How important it is that Elohim's people have their minds constantly employed in serving him perfectly in everything. This brings me to say this is our contest at the 11th hour call. We're going to close now with a song entitled, The Great Physician Now Is Near. The great physician now is near, the sympathizing Yahshua. He speaks the drooping heart to cheer. Oh, hear the voice of Yahshua. Sweetest note in seraph song, sweetest name on mortal tongue, sweetest carol ever sung, Yahshua, blessed Yahshua. All glory to the dying Lamb, I now believe in Yahshua. I love the blessed Savior's name, I love the name of Yahshua. Sweetest note in seraph song, sweetest name on mortal tongue, sweetest carol ever sung, Yahshua, blessed Yahshua. His name dispels my guilt and fear, no other name but Yahshua. Oh, how my soul delights to hear the precious name of Yahshua. Sweetest note in seraph song, sweetest name on mortal tongue, sweetest carol ever sung, Yahshua, blessed Yahshua. And when he comes to bring the crown of life and glory, then by his side we will sit down and tell the redemption story. Sweetest note in seraph song, sweetest name on mortal tongue, sweetest carol ever sung, Yahshua, blessed Yahshua.